Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for March 31st, 2024. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. Just a reminder right off the bat that next weekend, in case you've been living under a rock, is WrestleMania weekend. So we will be going on the air after both nights of WrestleMania, that's Saturday and Sunday night, getting your reaction to both nights of WrestleMania. So it'll be the same call in and email as it is tonight. So if you want to call in tonight and let us know your thoughts on WrestleMania, that's what we'll be talking about today, previewing the final few matches that we didn't get to last week with Zach Haydorn. We previewed NXT Stand and Deliver, as well as half of the matches at the time of WrestleMania. So we'll preview the other half tonight. And you can call us up 515-605-9345, or you can email us wnialivecast@gmail.com. I'm sure we're going to be going on the air late next weekend, so understandable if you can't stay up with us. That's what the email comes in handy. So right after the pay-per-view, you can send us an email about what you thought of the show. So today, to help me preview the last portion of the WrestleMania matches, those we didn't get to last week and those just announced this week, is my longtime close personal friend, Kurt Hoffman, former Gonzo and the Greg producer. Kurt, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America.
Greg, as always, thank you for bringing me on, sir. Always a blast. Here we are at the home stretch of WrestleMania. I'm excited to come on here and talk about the ongoing.
Yes, and I understand that you will be attending a big WWE show this year as well. Tell the people about that.
I will. So, SummerSlam is going to be in Cleveland. That's the word. And me and my lady, we plan on trying to score some tickets. Really want to go check that out. I got the pre-sale email. You know, I'm waiting to get word on when they're going to be dropping. And, man, I'm excited. I never thought I was going to be going to see a SummerSlam. You know, usually SummerSlams are, you know, somewhere like way off to the west or somewhere bright or sunny. You know, you never think I'd be in Cleveland. It's a very interesting location. Works for me. I'm all about that. So I can't wait. I hope I get to go.
And if you do, I hope that you'll call in and be our live correspondent for SummerSlam and give us your live perspective.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah, remind me. Yes, I would like to do that.
I'll shoot you a text for sure. WrestleMania, right. Kurt, what's your excitement level based on the card so far, based on the hype, based on the buildup?
It's pretty good. It's bigger than the last several WrestleManias. It's such a different twist and approach of what they've been doing before. This stuff has just literally gone beyond the boundaries of what they have been able to do for hype for WrestleMania, to the point where you're literally dropping F-bombs to a live crowd on Raw. This is insane. I love the main card. It's a really interesting card, to say the least, due to circumstances that has changed some things due to CM Punk being injured. But I think they took this tailspin and they righted the craft to where they're going in a different direction, but still going to get some great results. I love what they're doing.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about some of the matches here on the WrestleMania card. The big tag match, we've got Judgment Day defending their tag titles in a six-pack tag team ladder match against DIY, The Awesome Truth, New Day, A-Town Down Under, and New Catch Republic. So this is, I think this is a good snapshot of where the tag team division is across Raw and SmackDown right now. What do you think the work Judgment Day has been doing? They've been a real focus of Monday Night Raw. And then what do you think of the tag division and how it's been portrayed since Triple H took over?
The tag division, I think, still needs some improvement. It seems they're all right. It just, I don't know. Tag teams were always not quite the best specialty of the WWE. I'm hoping this is something that is still in development as we move along. That being said, the teams that they have are no slouches. I mean, I would agree for each of them to be in a match like this. It's just, I don't know. It's not much it's not much of a feud going on. More or less is like, hey, let watch these guys in this match. It'll be fun. You know, hopefully they can lead to a division that's more of a storytelling than just a spectacle.
I think you look at the teams here, DIY, yeah, they're good in the ring, but they don't get the crowds, the live crowds don't really seem to treat them, Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, as a big deal. They get into the matches late when they get to the finishing sequences and stuff. But when they get their entrances, there just isn't much of a reaction for them. Awesome Truth, you know, R-Truth has been kind of fun, but being paired up with The Miz feels in a way like a step backward, because The Miz certainly isn't a hot character by any means right now, and it's taking a step back to their former tag team when they were once a team. New Day is pretty cold right now. Austin Theory and Grayson Waller, they get to interact with some of the big talents, so they may be the hottest act of these, aside from Judgment Day. New Catch Republic of Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne still trying to find their footing. They had a really good match at the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view. So, yeah, it is kind of like a bunch of tag teams in various stages of development, I guess is what you would say. But one of my other questions, Judgment Day, what have you thought about their progress? And, you know, they get a lot of time on Monday Night Raw. Do you think it's deserved?
They were a very hot thing. I think they're starting to cool off a little just due to the fact that Rhea Ripley's just running away with this. Like, she's like the whole freaking show now. Every time she makes a TikTok video or somewhat, it just explodes. I feel that she's grown past Judgment Day, in my opinion. Dominic is doing very good, as maybe getting the most heat out of anybody in the industry to the point where you can't hear him talk anymore, which that's awesome. But again, I don't think he really needs Judgment Day to do that. As a matter of fact, he's on SmackDown doing a program in a tag team match that doesn't involve Judgment Day. Damian Priest seems that he still needs Judgment Day, but I just don't. They don't really flush it out as much on Raw as they used to with programs that they've had with, like, R-Truth and the inner turmoil that they had with McDonough. You know, it seems like they kind of petered out. The time that they've had on Raw, it seems like it should be waning. I almost feel that Judgment Day might be done after WrestleMania. That's what I think.
Mm. Yeah, I've kind of gotten the feeling the last couple of weeks that, you know, you talk about Rhea Ripley, she's almost outgrown Judgment Day. She's getting babyface reactions. It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is to, and we'll talk about this match a little later, but, you know, Becky Lynch, also a pretty strong babyface, but it feels like Rhea Ripley has kind of jumped her in that hierarchy of babyface women. So the reactions that both women get during that match is going to be interesting. But I do think the time is coming sooner rather than later that Rhea Ripley should be turned babyface and ditch Judgment Day. Do you get that feeling as well?
Absolutely, and I feel so bad for Becky Lynch. I'm telling it right now. Becky Lynch is going to get booed so bad. I feel so sorry for her, but it's just how powerful Rhea Ripley is. She's the next big thing, and, you know, Becky Lynch hopefully can still get a good match out of her and just anticipate the fact that, you know, she's going to have to work heel. just how it is.
Yeah, well, and that's going to be the interesting thing. Let's jump right into that match, Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley for the Women's World title. I mean, there are a couple of ways that WWE could do this. The first is they could just do babyface versus babyface and have Becky Lynch just work the match, reaction be damned. Or knowing – and Becky's smart. You know, she's not a dummy. She's probably going to know that she's not going to be – getting the overwhelming babyface reaction. So does she take it upon herself, or does she make the suggestion, hey, let me work heel in this match to get Rhea Ripley over more as a babyface? It could be dependent upon what WWE wants to do with Rhea Ripley after this. If they don't have any intention of turning her babyface anytime soon, you probably don't want Becky working heel and encouraging the fans to cheer for Rhea. But if you want to kind of reset Rhea after WrestleMania as the top babyface on Raw, maybe you do have Becky work heel a little bit.
And I'm just citing the example, the large example of when, you know, there was supposed to be The Rock being a babyface to go in to face Roman Reigns. I feel WWE does a good job of reading the tea leaves, if you will, and that I think they're going to get ahead of this and tell Lynch, like, you might have to work a little heel to try to, you know, I think the goal might ultimately be to lead to a Rhea Ripley face turn. And I'm not saying they're going to turn Becky Lynch heel, but they're going to at least try to help her boost Rhea Ripley with the crowd. I feel like they're going to do that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. That's going to be one of those matches, perhaps more than any others, looking up and down the card, that the reaction by the fan base is going to be really telling there. This match was a couple matches recently made on SmackDown that we'll get to. This one was one of them. Rey Mysterio teaming up with Dragon Lee, the newest member of the LWO, to take on Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. So interesting choice here, you know, to have these two warring factions, the LWO and Legado del Fantasma, and instead of having longtime members of those groups face off, you have Rey Mysterio recruiting Dragon Lee as a new member, and you have Santos Escobar recruiting Dominic Mysterio outside of the Legado family to basically be his tag team partner here. So I know that it's meant to kind of put the next step into the Rey Mysterio-Dominic Mysterio feud, but it does feel a little weird when the whole deal has been LWO versus Legado, and then half the members of this match are either just new members or not members at all.
It's so weird. You would think they took a hard right turn. Like, you would think they did it because somebody got injured and they had to rewrite who's going to be in the match. The way they just suddenly brought this about, it is so awkward. And it seems like what they should have done was, like, almost, you know, like a 4-on-4 tag match or something with group versus group. But instead, by bringing Dominic in, I'm like, well, why didn't they bring Dominic in earlier than if it was going to ultimately lead to another Rey Mysterio-Dominic match at WrestleMania? Because Dominic only showed up, like, the last 2 weeks out of nowhere to lead to this match. It's just so awkward, and it seems like they're – I don't know if it's a message to the guys in both the groups saying, like, sorry, we don't think you guys should be in this match. Instead, we're just going to put Dragon Lee in here and Dominic. I mean – I don't know if that puts faith in these groups or if they just really want to focus on just having Dominic and Dragon Lee get a boost from WrestleMania, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's the case, especially for Dragon Lee. You know, sort of the next in a long line of heir apparent to Rey Mysterio as that Hispanic star, you know, that WWE has been searching for. It was Sin Cara, it was Alberto Del Rio, now it's Dragon Lee. It seems like it's a cursed position, but I think Dragon Lee has a better chance than those guys of really being, quote-unquote, the next Rey Mysterio, although I don't want to put that on his shoulders because Rey's a legend beyond anybody else. But it's a good position for Dragon Lee to be in. Would you have done, I know this was a debate we had a week or two ago, would you have done Rey versus Dominic here, or would you want to wait on that till it feels like a bigger match and maybe not overshadowed by some of the other matches on this WrestleMania card?
Yeah, if I was going to do Rey and Dominic again, I would almost have it be like the end of the story, which it feels like they're quite a ways away from that. So I could see, you know, in that respect, why this match would make sense to further it along.
All right, to another match that was just recently made on SmackDown, Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill, and Naomi against Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane. So we have Jade Cargill, another debate that we had recently on Wrestling Night in America. Do you find a spot for Jade Cargill on WrestleMania, or do you not want to put her as a last-minute match? Do you have her win a women's battle royal, which it doesn't sound like they're doing? They've announced the Andre the Giant battle royal, have not announced a women's battle royal that they occasionally do on the pre-show or on the SmackDown before. Or do you, you know, keep her off the show completely, maybe have her make a backstage appearance or have her come out at the end of a match and motion toward one of the wrestlers to set up a program down the line and have her really not debut, but push her in earnest after WrestleMania. What do you think about the decision to use her in a six-woman tag match here on WrestleMania rather than the alternative winning a battle royal or saving her until after WrestleMania?
It seems like they're going to plug her in, hitting the ground running. Like maybe she's going to get involved with damage control straight out of the gate right after this match. That could be the only reason why I would think they would just stick her in this out of nowhere like that. With something of her star power and stature, though, I would have thought they would save her up for, like, the SmackDown after WrestleMania, you know? Usually that's the space where they would put in new faces for big shocking crowd reactions. So I was really confused why they gave her away on, you know, two SmackDowns before WrestleMania. And then I see this because they're going to put her in a match. I'm like, all right, okay, that I guess that makes sense. But Bianca Belair, I'm really confused why they never had her plugged into a program going into WrestleMania up until now. Like, her star power has been huge the last couple of WrestleManias. I find that to be awkward.
Yeah. Yeah, she just, you know, WrestleMania season seems to be when she shines, and then for whatever reason, when it's outside of WrestleMania season, WWE just doesn't seem to really know what to do with her. So, you know, there's that at play. But I do think in terms of Jade Cargill, and I agree with you on Bianca Belair, you know, I've been effusive in my praise of her. I think she's a huge star that WWE is, quite frankly, dropping the ball on in terms of that mainstream crossover appeal that she has, although she does have that reality show with her husband on Hulu. But I think if you are going to put Jade Cargill in a match at WrestleMania, I think, and I don't want to use the word hiding because I think that's I don't mean that as a diss on Jade Cargill's skills, but, you know, she came to WWE still certainly not a finished product, even as much ring time as she had in AEW. So this gives her an opportunity to exude that star power, but still not have to carry the bulk of a WrestleMania singles match and all the pressure that comes with that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, I just hope she doesn't take it personally out there. WWE's like, you know, keeping her in the training program, even though she was, you know, AEW's longest reigning champion, I believe, of all time. Like, I don't know if anybody's broke her record as longest reigning champion. But to bring her in and say, all right, you need more training, I just hope she doesn't, you know, take that personally. It just seems like an interesting situation. But, hey, you know, they're putting her on WrestleMania. Hopefully they got something bigger in the cards for her, and hopefully she can be able to do what they plan for.
Well, let's go to the mailbag here. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send those emails. This is from Azan in St. Louis. He says, Happy Easter, Greg and Kurt. Happy Easter to you and to everybody out there listening who celebrates. Azan's first question, Kurt, he says, what's your ideal outcome for the three-way U.S. championship match? And what do you think is Logan Paul's path post-Mania towards SummerSlam in his hometown? It being WrestleMania, I'm old-fashioned and traditional and whatever you want to call me. I think this should be a babyface-heavy show in terms of victories, in terms of feel-good moments and things like that. I think Randy Orton coming back from such a debilitating injury that he had to come back from and him being able to get the United States title here would be a really cool moment for him. It feels like it's been a while since he's held a title. I know he was the tag team champion with Riddle there, but in terms of singles gold. Getting to see Logan Paul finally get that comeuppance, I think would be really cool. Heading into SummerSlam, you know, Logan is such a versatile character. I think there's a lot of options for him. I really do. I think there are a lot of potential opponents, and it's really going to be tough because, you know, normally if you want to extrapolate out a few months, we can focus in on the SmackDown roster and say, okay, who on SmackDown could be facing Logan Paul, but WWE could throw us a little bit of a curveball after WrestleMania at some point, maybe late April, early May, and do a superstar shakeup and switch the brand. So, it's really hard to get a good feel for who might be an opponent for Logan Paul. But what's your thoughts on the best-case scenario? Who do you want walking out as champion at the Triple Threat? And heading into SummerSlam, the next major show that WWE has. Is there anyone that you think would be a good opponent for Logan Paul at that event?
Ooh, SummerSlam, yeah. Getting back to the WrestleMania match, I was thinking, okay, so we got Orton and Logan Paul in there, which means it's going to be ending with one of the damnedest RKOs you've seen in quite a while. Logan Paul's going to be dropping it 50
fingers
yards
crossed
in the air. Fingers crossed. He's going to catch a heck of an RKO. And I think that Kevin Owens is added into this match because I think he's the one that's going to be getting the belt. I think it's going to be RKO out of nowhere, big pop everywhere, and then Orton just turns around into a stunner and just Owens just takes the belt right there, just like that. And I think that Logan Paul, I feel it's going to be moving on to, like, world title after this. I think he'll be in contention for it. I don't think he'll be winning it any time soon, but I can see him maybe winning the Money in the Bank, perhaps, in that could be a thing.
Well, it is interesting because he did face Roman Reigns for the title. I think it was in Saudi Arabia. But if Cody Rhodes wins here at WrestleMania, that's a little bit different dynamic. Logan Paul, Cody Rhodes, that would be interesting.
That would be a great SummerSlam match. Yeah, I mean, if I was correct in thinking they're going to be pushing him up to a main card or a main title, I could see Logan Paul and Cody at SummerSlam. I personally am also rooting for Rock versus Cody at SummerSlam. I would love to see
that's
that.
True.
That'd be amazing. But instead, we probably might get Rock and Roman Reigns at SummerSlam. That is, if my theory is correct, and they are going to turn Roman Reigns' face after what will be happening this coming weekend. So if I'm fantasy booking then in totality, I'm going to have Cody versus Logan Paul, and then we have Rock versus Roman Reigns. Yeah, that's what I'm going with.
Interesting. Well, we're going to talk about Reigns and Rhodes a little later on, so I'm really interested to get your thoughts and to expand on that a little more. Azan's second question, he says, what's your ideal role for Carmelo Hayes after Stand and Deliver for Raw or SmackDown? Yeah, Hayes made some appearances mostly on SmackDown. It felt like he was being moved to the main roster, but then we haven't seen him in a little while. He's been doing the deal with Trick Williams in NXT. That's going to be a big match at Stand and Deliver. It does feel like Trick is going to vanquish Carmelo at Stand and Deliver, and then maybe Carmelo moves up to the main roster finally. I think there are other people a lot higher on Carmelo Hayes than I am. I'm not as high on him as other people are. I see him kind of slotting into that Grayson Waller, Austin Theory level, at least right away. He's got some upward mobility from there, but, what do you think about Carmelo Hayes? What do you see his role, if he does indeed move to the main roster after Stand and Deliver?
Yeah, seeing him and Trick together at NXT, it's interesting. WWE, I think, was trying to have Carmelo be kind of the breakout star. But turns out in the end, Trick is the breakout star from this duo. The crowd is into him so much. And once he comes in the main roster, I see a very, very bright side for him. Carmelo Hayes, he's very talented, yeah, but I don't know how this is going to translate to something that's going to want to draw me in to a program. So I could see him kind of being more of the, he'll have a feud with like Ricochet, give you a dazzling match at a pay-per-view. But, I don't see main title in him. I just don't see it.
It is Azan's third question. What are the pros and cons of Awesome Truth or New Catch Republic winning the belts in the ladder match? The pros for Awesome Truth is, hey, it's R-Truth with a title. That could be suitably wacky, I guess. The downside is pretty obvious, I think, that you have your tag titles on a comedy tag team. I don't think that's really how you want the belts presented. I think people had high expectations when Triple H took over. He's someone who's more old school, even than Vince McMahon was, in terms of believing that tag team wrestling can draw, just simply based on Triple H's booking in NXT, where it seemed like so many of the NXT special events had just blow-away tag team matches. So that wouldn't be a good sign. And then New Catch Republic winning, you know, I think it helps further establish them as a credible tag team. They're still trying to establish themselves. And the downside there is, again, you know, they had a big title match at Elimination Chamber, but it almost felt too soon for them to get that title match. I'm not sure if they're well established enough as a team to really – I'm not sure how much it would do for the belts for them to win it. But certainly, you know, from an in-ring standpoint, you could put them on any TLEs going forward, and they could be in contention for best match of the night depending on their opponent. So that would be a good sign. Pros and cons, Kurt, of Awesome Truth and New Catch Republic winning the titles?
Yeah. I mean, I pretty much agree with you on all fronts. Yeah, Awesome Truth, if they did win the titles, at least you'll get fun camera time with R-Truth, and the tag team belts will just happen to be in the camera shot too. You know, it could be some fun, funny programs with other tag teams. Maybe you could take some of those struggling tag teams and you might give them a fun, entertaining rub like DIY, you know, have like a feud with those two guys, or four guys rather. But that's the downside, is that it's just, Austin Truth's definitely a step down for what, you know, as you were saying, the big deal in lineage that Triple H is trying to make for tag teams like he did for NXT. Awesome Truth is not the answer to that. They're not. New Catch Republic could have potential to be that tag team. The pro could be that they might have those titles help elevate him to Triple H's expectations of what he wants to be a great tag team division. But the con is it's just too early to tell right now. And again, with them winning the titles, it's just a downside, just based on the fact that they're too fresh. They're not a unit. You know, they're not a cohesive unit yet. So yeah, I just don't see those two teams winning.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we've reached the bottom of the hour. This is Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Greg Parks and Kurt Hoffman here with you, previewing the last bit of the WrestleMania card. We only have Kurt for a limited amount of time tonight, so I see we've got a couple people on hold. Ryan and DJ are on, but I want to get us through the rest of the WrestleMania matches. We got three more to talk about, then we'll get to the phones here. Jimmy Uso and Jey Uso, Kurt. Certainly feels like a WrestleMania match. You know, they've been kept apart after their disillusion and Jey's leaving of the Bloodline and quitting SmackDown before moving over to Raw. He had to win himself over to the rest of the Raw locker room. So that was an experience that he had to go through, and now they're kind of coming back together after some time apart. You know, the whole Bloodline storyline is in the background of this, right? Because Roman Reigns, Tribal Chief, all that jazz, but there is some residual belief that Jey or Jimmy could take that crown at some point, could challenge Roman Reigns again for that crown. So that's all happening in the background of this match. Brother versus brother matches historically don't really draw very well. Bret and Owen, one of the exceptions. But creatively, they never really seem to live up to the hype. This one has the possibility of doing so. So I'm really interested to see, you know, it's really a toss-up here as far as who comes out the winner here. But I think it is the right time to do this match.
Yes, I love what they're doing here. I'm rooting for this match to be good. I really hope so. I want to go back in time to myself 3 years ago and say the Usos are going to break up. But somehow, it's going to be to both of their benefits. I would not believe that at all. I would not think that they could separate.
I know,
the Dudleys.
And the thing is, the easy – right. There's no Reverend Devon here. The easy thing would be to keep them together and to just keep that train humming along. I think it took a lot of guts, a lot of foresight to break them up and to believe – to have that belief that – they could really get over as single stars with their own personalities, because it, you know, it's hard enough when you got brothers, but it's, you know, Jimmy and Jey, they look quite a bit alike, right? So it's hard for them to kind of get that separation in the minds of the fans, but I think they've really done a nice job doing that.
I love it. And right when they brought them back together is when they're both just at the peak of what their individuality is. You know, like Jimmy's just a crazy man with those big eyes. He can just loves mayhem. The guy is playing a very good heel. And Jay, man, that crowd is behind Jay. What a face that guy has turned into. His entrance is magnetic, is hypnotic. You know, like the crowd is behind him. And how yin and yang can you be when literally just going yeet and no yeet? I love it.
They certainly stumbled upon something with that, didn't they?
They did. It's just, I can't wait for the back and forth of WrestleMania, which I think they did at the Rumble already, where you can hear the crowd go, yay, no yeet, yeet, no yeet. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. what's the future hold for them in the Bloodline storyline? You know, there's something happening on over here with The Rock and Roman Reigns and potential, you know, teases of those two going at it for the head of the table mantle. But, you know, Jimmy and Jay are still kind of loosely associated with it, at least in storyline terms. What do you think their future involvement looks like in the Bloodline storyline?
Yeah, that's a good question. To answer that, I want to know what The Rock's involvement is going to be after WrestleMania. Is he going to be gone? I mean, is he off to do the next movie or afterwards? Because I was wondering if The Rock's going to be the one that takes charge and, you know, maybe brings in some fresh faces and maybe the Usos might unite against The Rock. I don't know. It's very interesting. There's many different paths the way to how this could go. But a power struggle for dominance of the Bloodline involving both the Usos. Maybe they kind of like NWO and NWO Wolfpack, you know, have like Bloodline Yeet, Bloodline No Yeet. That'd be fun.
God, no. Oh, goodness. Yeah, that would
be.
But,
I mean, now keep in mind, though, Roman Reigns, he said it himself. He said that none of the Usos are going to be head of the Bloodline after he leaves. It's supposed to be solo.
Yeah. I mean, that's another aspect to it, right? How their interactions with Solo. Their interactions with each other are just so different. I think that's what makes that storyline historically so good, is Jay interacts differently with Jimmy than he interacts with Solo, than he interacts with Roman. And that's the cool thing, because when you put them all together, you're kind of reading the body language and reading the eyes and the looks that they give each other. You can read so much into those subtleties that we're just not used to seeing in wrestling.
Yeah, that's the uniqueness of this that I love so much. This isn't like the Bella Twins, where which one of the Bella, Nikki Bella, I think, was like, I wish you were never born, or I wish you, you know, some type of horrible, like, way
Night
over
the
boundaries.
What it was.
There it is. Stellar. Yeah. You know, there's none of this go off the deep end talk. They literally are like, look, I still love you deep inside. You're still my brother. But we're going to settle this. I'm going to beat the hell out of you. And then maybe I might see you for Christmas later. But we got some business to settle. Like I just love that honesty of that dynamic.
It's a little more nuanced of a story than the Bellas told. So, yeah, that's for sure.
For whom the Bellas told.
Yes. Well done, well done. You still got it, Kurt. You still got it.
clap,
the Intercontinental title. The Intercontinental title is on the line, Gunther versus Sami Zayn. This is another interesting one, because when I did my column back after the Royal Rumble looking at potential WrestleMania matches, I had a list of about a half dozen or more wrestlers that I think it would have been really cool to see Gunther wrestle here at WrestleMania. And Sami Zayn certainly would have been on that short list. So of all the choices they had, I mean, and he's such a complete performer that you could have put anyone in there and it would have been really cool. And you would have been really rooting for them to break this, this streak that Gunther has. What do you think about the decision, Sami Zayn here? And do you have him break this streak on the same weekend that you potentially have Roman Reigns streak broken? Do you see both of those being broken the same weekend?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I go back and forth on this. I love Sami Zayn so much. I wanted to see the visual of him conquering Gunther, you know, just that you never stood a chance underdog story, and he does it, and the crowd will go crazy. But I also want Chad Gable to do a heel turn and screw Sami Zayn out of beating Gunther.
I actually, yeah. When I was watching Raw on Monday, I was like, oh, God, Chad Gable. It dawned on me, like, listening to their promo, just, oh, my God, he's going to turn on him, isn't he? I definitely got that same feeling you did. I even tweeted it out, at Greg M. Parks, by the way, you can follow me. But that's I did put that out there as well, so.
I think that's going to happen, and I cannot wait, because I think Gable and Sammy would tear the freaking house down once they lock up.
You're a sick man.
Oh, will you stop? No, I think Braun Breaker's going to be the one. He's going to do it, and it's going to happen at SummerSlam, because I'm going to SummerSlam.
You are fantasy booking the hell out of this SummerSlam card, Kurt. It's almost like you have a rooting interest in this card looking really good.
Yeah, I have no idea why I have such high stakes in this. But, you know, I think a SummerSlam I want to see live, Braun Breaker beat Gunther and break the streak. I think that'd be astounding.
Yeah, Braun Breaker was one of those guys that was on my short list. When you saw his performance in the Royal Rumble and you heard that he was kind of taking the place of Brock Lesnar in the Rumble match, and there was buzz about Lesnar versus Gunther at WrestleMania, you said, okay, I could see Braun Breaker facing Gunther. And then he signs with SmackDown and Gunther's on Raw, and you're like, okay, maybe that's out the window now. So, I mean, again, of the choices of wrestlers up and down the roster that could have faced Gunther, is Sami Zayn the best choice here?
I think he's the best choice for a really, really good match against Gunther at WrestleMania if you planned on not taking that belt from Gunther. Because if you had Chad Gable back in there again against Gunther and you weren't going to have him beat Gunther, then it'd be extra disheartening seeing how Chad Gable was, you know, his motivations for this is because Gunther made his daughter cry. So, by default, if you were to put him in a rematch, she would have to beat Gunther at WrestleMania. So I think Gunther's not going to lose the belt because it's not Chad Gable in that match.
And because you want to see him lose it live.
I mean, there's that too.
The main event of night two of WrestleMania, Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. This is either going to be, depending upon the finish of the previous night's tag match, it is either going to be Bloodline rules or Bloodline will be banned from ringside. So there are so many – it's hard to talk about Reigns versus Rhodes in a vacuum because the situation is so dependent upon – what happens in the tag match? Does Rock turn on Roman Reigns? Do they tease a turn that he turns maybe Sunday night? Do, you know, the stipulation based on the result of the tag match changes how you view this match? You know, does Bloodline ban from ringside mean they can't get involved some other way? Does this mean Tama Tonga, who's not officially a member of the Bloodline but who is signing with WWE, does that mean he can get involved? I mean, it's hard. You want to talk about Reigns versus Rhodes in a vacuum, but it's just not possible because there's just so much else going on. But what do you think of the hype? I mean, what do you think of The Rock's return? So much of the focus has been on him, and it's almost like, oh, by the way, Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns is the main event, because a lot of it does feel like they're building to Cody versus Roman. I mean, or Cody versus Rock. Is that to throw us off the scent when Rock eventually turns on Roman and supports Cody? Like, what's your read on that?
There is, I love the fact that I'm kept guessing on this. This is not obvious at all. I love it because it can go so many different directions. Rock could help get a legit one-on-one match on night two, or The Rock could help himself by screwing over Roman Reigns to show him that he's the head of the bloodline. You know, he'll screw over Roman Reigns, but he'll do it to his own heel benefit to help Cody win that belt to The Rock, take that shit from him from, SummerSlam. So, or it could just be a legit finish to the tag match. Nobody screws anybody over. You know, Cody and Seth Rollins pull it off. They beat them both. Now we got a fair shot. Or the heels win. They try to get involved on night two. And then all hell breaks loose when Austin and Cena come out to help. There's so many different ways that this could go. I love it.
Are you concerned at all about the overbooking potential of either the tag match, Reigns versus Rhodes, or both? Because there is some overbooking that's okay, and there's some overbooking that's not. And we've seen WWE try to walk that line in Roman Reigns matches, and they don't always succeed. So I'm wondering if there's any concern on your part that this could just kind of devolve into just one huge overbooked mess.
Yeah, it definitely could go down that avenue, almost certainly. As you said, it's Roman Reigns. It's also The Rock. There's going to be some smoke and mirrors going on with The Rock, too. Speaking of booking standpoints, though, I'm still trying to make sense of how they had Seth Rollins come into this to say, I'll wrestle for two nights, even though my opponent, Drew McIntyre, is not wrestling for two nights. I'm trying to get the IQ of this booking situation for why a face would agree to that.
I think part of it is he's really anti-bloodline as well, and if he can play a role in ending or stopping the bloodline's dominance, I think he wants to take part in that. I'm not saying it's a smart decision. I'm saying, you know, baby faces often make dumb decisions when it comes to, like, you know, baby faces who invite triple threat matches and stuff like that. Like, that's always been a bugaboo of mine, I think, and a lot of others as well, because it makes them look dumb. But, you know, I think in this case, it's Rollins taking that risk for the betterment of the company, knowing that he could play a part in stopping the bloodline or at least getting the title off of Roman Reigns.
Right. I was just thinking, like, they should have forced Drew McIntyre to wrestle two nights also to try to make it even. I don't know. I don't know how I would work myself around that, but, you know, I'm not the guy who writes these things.
That's true. All right, so yeah, that is the WrestleMania card. Really interesting. I think, you know, we spent a good amount of time with Zach Hadorn last week and with you, Kurt, talking about this card. And you know, it feels like we've been in WrestleMania season forever. So when we get to next week and the next time I talk to everybody, we'll be talking about at least the results of night one of WrestleMania. So that's going to be really cool. Let's go to the phones. We've got the 814 area code. It's Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland, as usual, starting us off. Ryan, good to hear from you tonight. What's your first question for us?
First question is about CM Punk. Do you think WWE is dropping the ball by having CM Punk tease to be the referee for the Drew McIntyre, Seth Rollins title match, then say he's just to be the commentator when he got so many cheers when he counted 1, 2, 3 on the mat?
Yeah, that was this past Monday on Raw, CM Punk making his return and talking about being at WrestleMania, having a role at WrestleMania, specifically in the Drew McIntyre-Seth Rollins match. That's something we haven't talked about, Kurt, is your impression of Punk. I know we haven't had a lot of time with him pre-injury in WWE, but your thoughts on him coming back to WWE and how he's done so far and, you know, his role in the Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre match coming up.
Yeah. CM Punk, I mean, granted, you don't got much to base it off of because he's been out and injured for a while, but he's so far, I haven't heard any articles about him punching people in the back, so that's good. That's a plus. I feel like it's genuine, like, that he's at peace with where he's at now in the WWE compared to how it was 10 years ago. I feel like he can get along with this era better. Or he could just be putting on a nice face, and I'm just delusional to this. But I don't know. That's what I'm seeing. If I'm not mistaken, I mean, if he's not medically clear, he cannot be a referee, right? That just can't happen.
Yeah, that would be risky. But and I think that goes to Ryan's point of why would you even tease that if you're WWE, you know, if you know
he can't perform
in that role.
Right. I think it's because a lot of that segment was improv. I feel that they were just going with it because, I don't think they were, like, told to do that because, you know, as we know, that doesn't make sense. But, unless if they're really messing with us, CM Punk actually got cleared a while ago, you know, kind of like when Cena showed up on the Royal Rumble out of nowhere those years ago.
Yeah, I don't think Punk is bionic in the same way Cena is in terms of his healing power.
That's true.
So, Kurt, just another question about Punk before we go back to Ryan. Like, I know you know, when we were doing Gonzo and the Greg and when we were, you know, watching wrestling each and every week with each other, you were a big Punk fan, and I was a big Punk fan. Has your opinion of him changed at all with everything that went down with him in AEW?
A little bit. I mean, yeah, I think a lot of what he's done has been a bit to the extreme. I mean, for him to just totally detonate and destroy whatever goodwill or mileage that he put into AEW was just dumbfounding over some bit involving glass on a car. I mean, obviously I wasn't there. There could be some other factors that we don't know about. But again, then going before that, you know, his meltdown at the press conference, didn't really have to be at the press conference. You know, he could have just easily grabbed one of them in the back, grab anybody else, and just went through the whole rant that he just went through. That's a bit grandiose, you know. That stuff, I thought he could have conducted a lot better. And I think he realizes that, too. Now being in the WWE, because I don't foresee him going to that mode in this company. I feel there's a lot more people he would, I would think, get along with more than when he's in AEW. I mean, I don't know, maybe CM Punk was just, I don't know, just trying, I wouldn't say desperate, but he just saw an opportunity to finally do things his way in AEW without realizing the consequences that he's doing so with people that he did not and maybe never will ever get along with.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, I think. Everybody's got their opinions on Punk, and some lay more of the blame at Punk's feet, some lay more of the blame at the Young Bucks' feet and Tony Khan's feet and people like that. But, you know, it is something that, as longtime CM Punk fans, I think it's something to think about. Ryan, back to you for your second question for us.
Okay, my second question is, when we see Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania, in what role could that be at WrestleMania 40?
I doubt it. You know, they had done the video package with Hogan at the Royal Rumble, and he didn't even show up there live. And that's right in his backyard. It was in St. Petersburg, which is, you know, pretty close to where he lives in Central Florida. And if the rumors are true that Kurt sort of alluded to earlier about potentially the presence of Steve Austin and John Cena at WrestleMania, although it is, I mean, it's WrestleMania 40. It's a number that ends with zero. So it's a historic number at WrestleMania. So, you know, does WWE, are they of the opinion that they need to bring back a lot of former stars to represent that? I don't know. But if Cena and Austin play any kind of role, even if it's just in backstage segments, then I don't think you see Hogan. And even then, I'm not sure you bring him back. I'm not sure what role he would really fill in WrestleMania. And it's in Philadelphia. You know, Philadelphia has a reputation. I know most of it's going to be a fly-in crowd, but the last time Hogan was on WrestleMania, he didn't exactly get a warm reception. And I'm not sure it's going to be any different this time, Kurt.
I mean, technically, they haven't really announced a host for WrestleMania yet, did they?
Trying to think. I think maybe there was speculation that Punk would be the host, but that didn't turn out to be true. So I don't think they've made anyone official in that role. You're right.
Right. I mean, I guess they could use Hogan for that, but I mean, I could see him maybe doing that just because, as you said, you know, 40, kind of a milestone WrestleMania. But if they don't put him there, then I don't see him really being out there at all, unless they start doing the old school goofy-ass segments in the back with all the legends and Enzo Farouk going, damn, you know, but I don't see Hogan being any part of that. Just curious about the dynamic with Hogan now at the WWE, now that Vince McMahon's gone. Do you think they're going to go back to Hogan as much as they would have before? Because, you know, Vince McMahon and Hogan are tight. Now that Vince McMahon's gone, I'm not saying they'll never bring Hogan back ever again, but when do you think would be the next time they would actually bring him back?
I think that's a question you could ask of a lot of legends and a lot of wrestlers of a different era is, you know, their relationship with Vince McMahon could be very different than their relationship with Triple H or Triple H's view of their worth as a television performer could be different than Vince McMahon's view of their worth as a television performer. So that's something else you have to take into account, not just for Hogan, but for really anybody else, a legend or former wrestler, that's all got to be taken into account as well. So that's, you know, that's a fair question for Hogan, especially because of his and Vince's history. Ryan, your third and final question for us tonight.
Final question is something Preston, we don't like, said Disco Inferno, implied that maybe the reason why we don't see Sammy Guevara on TV, especially that he got suspended for injuring Jeff Hardy, but Disco believes it might have something to do with Sasha Banks debuting in AEW, and that might make her feel uncomfortable in tennis. Likes to avoid conflict between the wrestlers.
I think that was hashed out. Guevara made some awful comment about Sasha Banks many, many years ago, I think on a podcast, and I think that's been kind of settled. That was my impression of it when it first came to light. So I don't really think that's probably a reason. I don't know. You know, Sammy Guevara being suspended kind of shadow banned a little bit for his role in the Jeff Hardy situation and that injury that Jeff suffered. I think, you know, it's Tony Khan, you know, being a little more putting his foot down, and maybe it's because Sammy's first time, so he feels he needs to be a little more tough on a talent, but that's kind of my impression, Ryan. Kurt, any other thoughts on that situation?
If I'm not mistaken, I think part of Sammy Guevara's punishment or whatever you want to call it for the stuff of the Madman Old podcast, I think he actually called up Sasha Banks and they hashed it out. And I think it ended peacefully. So I wouldn't
that was my
think the rumor. Yeah, I wouldn't think they let him sit down because of Sasha Banks coming in. I forgot the other part of that question.
And I think, look, I mean, if you're Sasha Banks, if you're Sasha Banks coming into AEW, you know who's on the roster. And if you're uncomfortable with someone being on the roster, you know, maybe you don't sign, or maybe, like, I don't think you can turn this into another CM Punk situation.
Which is what we thought CM Punk would have done. Right,
well, you don't want to have a CM Punk situation where you're trying to, you know, keep people away from each other and not on TV at the same time and things like that, and that just gets very messy. Ryan, thanks for the phone call this week.
Okay, thanks for taking the call.
All right, Kurt, I know you got to go in a few minutes. Let's get to one more email, and then we'll get back to the phones here, and we'll let you go. So this is from John. He's got five WrestleMania-related topics. He says, the biggest surprise moments of WrestleMania. He says, I consider Damian Priest cashing in, especially if it's on Cody or Roman, to be a surprise moment. Same for a big wrestler return or an unexpected title change. A more out-of-the-box prediction of a surprise would be if Cody wins the championship from Roman and The Rock, using his TKO board power, makes an impromptu match for Cody's title, and leaves WrestleMania with the championship. Question, what are the biggest surprise moments you think could be plausible? I know, Kurt, you've already listed yours. It's the appearance of John Cena and Steve Austin to stave off the bloodline in the main event. I do think not enough conversation has been given to Damian Priest in the Money in the Bank briefcase. You know, that potential is out there. I really – I don't see him cashing in successfully on Cody or Roman, because the story is so centered on those guys. I don't think you want to bring in a Damian Priest at this point, but any other surprises, real surprises you could think of for the show?
For the show? I mean, I guess maybe introducing new Bloodline members like Tama Tonga or what about Jacob Fatu? Is he available or is he still locked in with them?
I think so. It seems less likely than Tama Tonga, though.
Gotcha. Yeah, I can't say too much in terms of surprises. Yeah, I don't see Damian Priest casting in that briefcase unless they want the crowd to riot right after Cody wins the belt and finishes the story. If anything, you know, if I think that Judgment Day is going to dissolve after WrestleMania, I would try maybe a face turn and have him try to cash that belt against, like, Drew McIntyre, who I'm assuming is going to be beating Seth Rollins for that title.
Well, John's second question is an issue we've kind of already addressed. With rumors of John Cena and Steve Austin potentially getting involved with this storyline, the Bloodline at WrestleMania, this could get messy or it could be done to perfection. Personally, if both have to be involved, I'd have interactions between Cena and Austin and the Bloodline early on at WrestleMania, planting seeds for their eventual involvement in either or both main events. Question, do you think either or both of these main events is likely to be overbooked or straightforward? And what do you think about Cena or Austin being involved? I could almost guarantee that it's going to be overbooked. But again, there are levels of overbooking that is acceptable if it fits the story, and there are levels of overbooking that is just too much. And I think, again, WWE has been riding that line, occasionally going over it in this Bloodline storyline. Anything else to add to that topic, Kurt, before we go to the next one?
No, I agree. There's going to be a lot of writing going on for these two nights in this feud. If the seeds were planted, by golly, when they had that trailer with John Cena and Steve Austin in the background while The Rock was beating the holy hell out of Cody. And by the way, one of the most beautifully directed beatdowns I've seen on TV in quite a long time.
For sure.
But yeah, you're right. And in order for this to not get too messy, maybe you would have Austin and Cena hurry up and come down at the beginning just to, you know, fight off the Bloodline in the different directions. And just maybe it just neutralizes the Bloodline rules thing, and then we finally have just a legit one-on-one match after all, even though Rock and Roman might win on night one. So, you know, therefore, you wouldn't have any goofy finishes at the end unless Tama Tonga happens to come up on the corner and beats Cody over the head with something. But that's how I think you could do it in a less messy fashion, I think.
So a prediction for match of the night, John says, I personally think Becky Lynch versus Rhea Ripley has the potential to steal the show if given enough time. It's certainly the match I'm most looking forward to, and I feel it can eclipse Rhea Charlotte from last year. If you had to narrow it down to one, what's your prediction for match of the night? Now, we don't know all the matches that are going to occur on night one versus night two, but if you had to pick a match of the WrestleMania, two-night WrestleMania, you know, me personally, I hope it's Cody versus Roman, because that's the biggest match. And you hope that the biggest match is also the best match. But I think, you know, I think Mysterio and Dragon Lee versus Escobar and Dominic could be kind of the sneaky bet to win a match of the night. Any predictions for match of the night for you?
Just the one. I think it's going to be Sami Zayn and Gunther, because they're both damn good storytellers. I think the crowd's going to be really into this match, especially towards the end. That's the one that's going to stand out as being just an emotionally invested, just two men beating the holy hell out of each other. It's going to be great.
If it was up to you, which match would main event night one? John said I'd go with Becky Rhea as the main event, with Rock, Roman, Cody, Seth tag match opening WrestleMania night one, but I suspect it's more likely to be the other way around. If it was entirely up to you, which match would main event night one? I mean, it's hard for me to imagine The Rock in a match not main eventing a night of WrestleMania. Like, that doesn't compute for me. So I would say it would have to be the tag match, and then Reigns versus Rhodes night two as well. Do you think there's a possibility that there's another match that could main event night one? Could it be You know, could it be Rhea Becky? Could it be something else?
No, I don't think it could be anything else. I mean, Rhea Becky would be a very nice main event for WrestleMania. But as you said, it's The Rock. Rock don't open for nobody anymore, baby. The Rock will be main eventing. It's in the video package for the event. You know, you got. I knew this tag match was going to happen before they even announced it was going to happen, just because of the video package of showing Cody and Rollins facing off with Rock and Roman. Like, they just showed that. I'm like, well, the only reason why they would show that is because it's going to be a tag match. And sure enough, lo and behold, it's a tag match that I'm very confident will be the main event.
And John's final question for us, your letter grade for the WrestleMania buildup. He says, I feel like 2/3 of this year's WrestleMania buildup has been solid, but lacking finesse. Until the last few weeks, I feel almost every feud besides maybe Logan Paul, Randy Orton, Kevin Owens has been a C+, with certain feuds getting a B+ or an A-. I feel like Bayley, Io Sky has been about a week or so behind schedule, and Io has largely been a background character. Plus, now WWE choosing to bring Jade Cargill to SmackDown has maybe taken some of Bayley's shine, because they could have waited until after WrestleMania to have her debut. But they had her closing this week's SmackDown instead of Bayley. But things really heated up with the Rock-Cody beatdown angle and the Seth Drew Punk and Becky Rhea promos on Raw. He says there have been stellar performances, especially from Drew and Sami Zayn and Gunther and Cody and Rhea, etc., but many of the storylines have felt a little muddled or had pacing issues. You could also give them the benefit of the doubt because of The Rock's involvement and Punk's and Seth's injuries, but my final grade is a B+. Question, what letter grade would you give the build-up to WrestleMania? Keep up the great work. Thank you, John. As a teacher, I feel wholly qualified to give my letter grade to the WrestleMania buildup. I would say it's a B. I'm right there close to John. You know, I think a B is a pretty solid grade for what they've done. I think there's a lot of anticipation, Kurt, as you mentioned. I think I'm not sure that any feud and any storyline has been, like, pitch perfect. I think there's been kind of little potholes along the way in each one of them, but I don't think it's hampered the overall storyline enough to bring the grade down further than a B.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, there's feuds in there that I wish they could have fleshed out better. But the ones they did really good. Like, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel bad that Bayley and Io Sky is the match I'm like, least looking forward to due to the fact that they... And I thought they had a good angle with the whole betrayal with friends and, you know, but they just, I don't know. I feel like what they've done on SmackDown, like last SmackDown, where, you know, finally told her side of the story and then, you know, Bayley jumps her after the interview. That should have been like the next week after they turned on her. But
yeah,
it took a bit too long to finally get to this point. But that being said, yeah, I would say a B.
Kurt, I appreciate you joining us here tonight. We only break you out for the big shows, so I had to have you here for WrestleMania season. Always good to get a chance to talk to you and reminisce about the many hours that we sat next together watching wrestling on television, watching pay-per-views, watching DVDs and everything like that. So Kurt Hoffman, former producer of my old audio show, Gonzo and the Greg, which you can find if you're a VIP member of PWTorch.com in the archives. That was always a lot of fun doing that show and fun getting to talk to you here about WrestleMania, Kurt. So thanks for hopping on with us tonight.
Greg, always a pleasure. As I sat there watching Cena versus Rock, their first one at WrestleMania on YouTube, I remember us doing all of the programs leading up to it. And then it dawned upon me, that was 10 years ago. Oh, my God.
Don't say that, man. Don't say that. That hurts.
I know. You know. But, Greg, 10 years later, I'm glad to be on here, make my little appearance, give you the road, brother. Thank you so much for bringing me on. Looking forward to be back around SummerSlam time, right?
I hope so. We'll talk to you then.
All right. Take it easy, everybody.
All right, thank you, Kurt. Kurt Hoffman, former producer Gonzo and the Greg, VIP.PWTorch.com for those archives. Let's go back to the phones here. 305 area code, DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America this week. What's on your mind?
What's going on? It's Easter, so I'm going to go off the rails a little, all right?
Well, at Easter, you're supposed to stay on the rails.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. I saw saw this thing in the ring. I didn't know what it was or what was going on, but if they sold out like that, Vince never did that. He hated that. He took the WWE logo off the middle. Now, if this really goes through and they really make a lot of money, what's going to stop them hitting all four turnbuckles? Or when they go to, like, I'm just making an example, if they go to even Netflix, can Pornhub or Reddit or True or any, or, you know, I'm just making an example, like, how could a dispensary, anything can be on those logos if they have money to throw it on there? What do you think at the end of the day? Do you think they'll take that off? Do you think whatever money who throws at them, they can put their logo on there?
Well, I think WWE is probably going to be very judicious about where they put logos of certain companies. So some of the examples that you gave, DJ, I doubt WWE is going to want to plaster those logos on their mats and on their turnbuckles. So I think you it has to be a product that WWE is going to be proud to be associated with, because it's going to be seen by more people than, you know, almost any other advertising WWE does, because it's going to be in the ring. I know that there are people that have a huge problem with this. I got to be honest, I don't. You know, I if they want to put advertising on the ring skirt, or, I mean, there are ways to do it classy and ways to not do it classy. We've seen WWE do some advertising where it's just really cheesy and it makes you resent the product a lot more than be interested in purchasing it, which is probably not the intent of the company that's advertising. So, you know, simply having something on the mat, I think that's not too obtrusive for me as a viewer, but I understand that people's mileage may vary on that. So, DJ, what else do you have for us tonight?
I just want to say, though, like, I just don't want to see, because I know, like, the biggest thing is, like, Pizza Hut, and I just don't want to see that red on the mat like that. I just, you know what I'm saying? Just, you know,
yeah, I mean, it depends.
You know, look like
there's always
going to
be
tacky,
there's always going to be a line, DJ. There's always going to be a line, and you know, you may be able to get away with putting the logo on the apron, but if you change your entire color scheme or do something like that, then yeah, it's going to bother people. But I don't know for sure that that's going to be the case.
My second thing is, I don't know if you watch Buffett the stuff, but Buff was saying that before he got hurt, he said he would be in the top five right now in WWE. I was like, okay, buddy. But even, like, his, like, old partner, like, had no teeth. I was like, this is crazy. Like, you know, I think, like, he wasn't that okay wrestler. Like, you know, like, he could have been in EAW, but this is, like, at the end of the day, I don't think he would ever be in the top five. I don't know why he would say that.
Well, DJ, I've got some news to break for you. Wrestlers can be delusional sometimes and can overstate their value, and I think that's what Buff Bagwell is doing here. I assume you're talking about the Dark Side of the Ring episode on Buff Bagwell. I am a little behind my Dark Side of the Ring viewing. I finished the previous season. I haven't started this season yet, so I have not. I've heard the buzz about the episode and, you know, heard that there were some either tall tales told by Buff or people rebuffing his version of the events. You know, I thought I thought it was a bit of an overreaction by Vince McMahon to completely scrap the WCW invasion storyline or retool it to the point where WCW had lost all of its teeth in the feud with WWE based on the Buff Bagwell Booker T match in Tacoma. But I also don't think Buff's ceiling as a wrestler is as high as he believes it to be.
Yeah, for sure. That's always watch it. It's pretty funny. I was like, what did he just say that? That was so funny. Like, the top five? Okay, buddy. So I thought that was so funny. My last thing is, I feel like the thing with Punk, he said last week about the drive-thru and the other thing with Joe Cornette, I feel like he was giving it to EAW because they say a lot of bad things about, you know, about EAW, and then, you know, Jim Cornette was on CM Punk's side when, you know, the whole fight thing happened, you know, a couple years ago with him and the Bucks and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, I feel like CM Punk should also be maybe a commentator the Bloodline and Cody? I don't know, because he has unsolved business. I don't know. Like, it's so funny how, like, he wants to do something, but, I mean, we should, do you think that they should ring him around the whole circle, or do you think that, okay, that's it, that the, you know, referee and, you know, he should, they'll probably hit him or something, or do you think he should do commentator too, because they are mentioning he's such a good commentator at the end with Cody and Roman?
You know, we talked about this a little earlier. I would expect commentary. We talked about how, you know, we don't really know if he's even cleared to be in the ring to act as a referee because, you know, he's still healing. He's still doing rehab from his arm, his elbow, and you don't want to mess with that. You don't want to put him in a position where he's going to end up missing more time or aggravate an injury. So I would keep him out of the ring. I would keep him strictly on commentary for that match. And, you know, I wouldn't get him involved in the Bloodline in any way. I would keep him to Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins because that's the story that he was involved in. So that's kind of my take on it there, DJ.
Yeah. I was wondering because, you know, he was saying he had no business with the Bloodline too. So, and Roman and blah, blah, you know, all the, you know. So that's what I was asking. Like, sure. Do you think he'll be commentating at the end? You know how he sticks his nose
in there. I doubt
it.
Like I said, I think it'll stick to the – I mean, his story is more with Drew than anything else, to a lesser extent, Seth, so I think they'll keep him to that story. So, DJ, thank you for calling in tonight.
I do want to say one thing, though. I just have this one thing so you do think about it. I don't know why, but I think that Jay, right? He's going to turn because it is – they keep on saying – I'm telling you, something's going to happen with Jay and – one of the matches is going to jump in. I don't know. I just feel like he has to go back to the Bloodline sooner or later. I don't know. I know he's so big and raw, but I don't know. It's so, you know what I'm saying? Because all they keep on saying is family.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Something to keep in the back of our mind while we're watching that for sure. Thanks, DJ.
Yeah. All right. See you next week. Thanks so much.
All right. Another email to get to before we go back to the phones. This is from Dustin. He said, your March 24th episode had a question about how the CM Punk injury affected WrestleMania plans. Do you think Rock would have still bigfooted his way into WrestleMania if he didn't have the CM Punk injury excuse? I think, speculate wildly, that Rock said privately in the boardroom that the Vince scandal needed to be smokescreened by Rock at WrestleMania. Rock said again privately, but to a different audience, wrestlers, that it was the CM Punk injury that made it necessary for Rock to appear at WrestleMania. Punk's injury was a great excuse. WrestleMania suddenly, quotation marks, needed Rock. I remember reading dozens of social media remarks that CM Punk injury made Rock's intervention necessary. That's what part of the audience thought, forgetting the real-life scandal. I think it was the Vince lawsuit that made the intervention necessary, and Rock has extremely effectively, being a marketing genius, distracted from that scandal. Nobody's talking about Vince being a potentially criminal pervert. Everybody talking Rock said this, Rock did that, Rock promo, and CM Punk gave Rock the secondary excuse to insert himself into the narrative, especially to the very smart fans, quotation marks. Smart marks, maybe. Without the injury, Rock might have found it difficult to justify his entry to the locker room. I think there was a lot of reporting that Rock felt it necessary to be a part of it. I don't know if this was speculation or I don't know if this was fact-based reporting that Rock felt inclined to participate based on the Vince situation. I also think that Rock probably needed to make up his mind well before that dropped because that happened in January. And if Rock's wrestling at WrestleMania, you would think that he would want to prepare himself mentally and physically well before that. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. So I think that was, at worst, it was timing for WWE because Dustin's right. People are talking more about The Rock and that and his comeback and, you know, the promos that he's cut and the beatdowns that he's done, the segments that he's appeared in, rather than focusing on all the stuff with Vince. So it has worked out to WWE's benefit in that way. I don't know if, you know, the discussion then is, was it designed that way or was it just happenstance? And The Rock has long been rumored for WrestleMania. So this isn't something that would be out of the blue. But certainly, you know, it's a question to be raised, I think. All right. We'll go back to the phone. The 240 area code. I believe this is Steve from Bowie, Maryland. Steve, is that you?
Yes, it is, Greg. Good evening. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling in again tonight, Steve. What's on your mind?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to bring up a point that I made last week. I'm going to be curious as to see how much WWE can refrain itself from doing something stupid because of what tomorrow's date is. No,
I'm just hoping none of my kids in class do anything stupid tomorrow. That's my real concern is right now. I'm not worried about WWE so much, but certainly there is the possibility. But if this was any other date besides the last Raw before WrestleMania, I could share your concern. But I think they're going to be so hyper-focused on doing that last hard sell for WrestleMania that I don't think this is even going to be on their mind.
Sure. Yeah. The only thing I can think of that they might be able to get away with is something in the back involving somebody like R-Truth, something like that. They could have a little...
Something minor, maybe.
Have a little comment, something minor like that. But a lot of what I was going to bring up was covered in John's email. So instead of talking about main eventing each night, I know there are a lot of wrestlers out there who say, if I ain't last, I want to be first. Who would you put, and I know they like to bring out somebody who gets a high pop and is a big, you know, will get a big pop as that first wrestler out of the, down the ramp or that first entrance music you hear. Who would you put as the first match each night?
I feel more comfortable night two saying Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre. There is risk of opening with a main title like that we've seen in the past. Edge and Alberto Del Rio, I think, did it. And there's a lot of backlash from fans about that. And then you also have the situation where, look, Seth Rollins is going to main event night one. Is it fair to have him open night two? You know, that's going to be a question as well. But I think there's a possibility that opens night two. Night one, you know, I could see maybe the six-pack ladder match could open night one, perhaps. Perhaps one of the women's title matches opens night one. I think those, the U.S. title, Logan Paul, Orton, and Kevin Owens, I think could open night one. So there are a couple of options. I think I would put those matches in particular pretty high up on the list, though.
Okay. I was thinking the very same thing about Seth and Drew opening night two, again, using my big pop theory, that first music you can play on night two is Cult of Personality as CM Punk comes out to do commentary.
True.
That would pop big. But what else?
Yeah, agreed. There are a lot of options. There are a lot of options for that, I think, for sure. Anything else for us tonight, Steve?
I just heard one of them say, if they overbook Sunday night, a lot of people are calling what Cody might pull as the Avengers tactic. He's gonna call on all the Avengers to show up and help him fight off the Bloodline, Cena, Stone Cold, Seth maybe. And it's a shame, it's a darn shame that they were never able to work anything out, that Dustin couldn't be part of this.
Yeah, that would be cool. And I think that would be, you know, we talk about the lesser of several evils here, right? How much overbooking is too much. I think if you try to get the Bloodline involved, or if, you know, Reigns and Rock win on night one, which means it's a free-for-all, basically, you know, that doesn't preclude Cody from having his own people at ringside to sort of neutralize the threat of the rest of the Bloodline. And that would be an interesting story to be told. And I think if the heels win on night one of WrestleMania, I think we're going to be talking about on this show that scenario that you laid out, Steve, a little more in depth for night two. So I think it's definitely a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, hope everybody enjoys the weekend. Those shows are going to be a little too late from my ever-increasing age, and so I might hit the sack as soon as both those nights are over. But I thank you for taking my call, and enjoy the weekend.
Understandable. Thank you, Steve. And if you're like Steve and you're going to go to bed right after WrestleMania or maybe even halfway through, don't forget to send your thoughts on either night or both nights of WrestleMania via email, wnialivecast@gmail.com. The next phone call is the 409 area code. 409, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Greg. This is Freddie P. Living in Hollywood right now.
Freddie P., good to hear from you again. What's on your mind tonight related to WrestleMania?
Well, just one commentary, two questions, and then I'll listen to you. Real quick with the commentary, right. I've been listening to a lot of – yeah, I've been watching a lot of Thunderbolt promos, and God dang, it's interesting how much Dusty Rhodes, you know, borrowed, shall we say, from his style and promo. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, I didn't know much about him until this was announced, but now I'm just so interested in going back and just really looking at his breadth of work. So just curious to see if you have any comments on that. Second thing would be, I don't really know who Dragon Lee is, and I saw Rey Mysterio introduce him as the mystery opponent, or sorry, the mystery tag partner to go against Dominic, and I forget the other dude's name and the judge. Is Dominic and who else?
It's Santos Escobar he's teaming with.
That's right. Yeah, Dominic and Escobar. So, yeah, if you can go a little bit into who Dragon Lee is and what's the significance of Rey introducing him into this match. And then last but not least, what are you looking forward to in Paul Heyman's Hall of Fame speech? Thanks, Rey.
Awesome. Thank you, Freddie. Good to hear from you. Yeah, good topics there. So Thunderbolt Patterson – you know, I don't have a lot of experience watching his work, but a larger picture here is the Hall of Fame. You know, we kind of joke about the WWE Hall of Fame and how unserious it is based on who they've put in. But I do think when you put in someone like Thunderbolt Patterson, who a lot of people, especially current day fans, are not familiar with, I think the best case scenario is exactly what Freddie is doing, where you go back and you're curious about this person that's going into the Hall of Fame of a company that you watch. And maybe you look up on YouTube or you look up on the WWE Network, Thunderbolt Patterson stuff. And, you know, you become a smarter fan. You become a fan of maybe a different era of wrestling, and you go down rabbit holes that you wouldn't have otherwise gone down. And I think that's a really cool thing to do. You know, there's nothing wrong with being a fan of just the current era of wrestling, but I think the more well-rounded you can be and the more knowledgeable that you can be, the better fan you can be as well. So that's – I really appreciate that WWE – by putting some of these wrestlers in the Hall of Fame, you know, does set in a curiosity factor with some fans to go back and check out their work. Dragon Lee, big name in Mexico. It was a real coup for WWE to sign him. He went to NXT, was put on TV almost immediately after signing, which doesn't always happen. And, you know, he was not a main event guy on NXT, but he was you know, pushed pretty well. And then they brought him up to the main roster quite quickly, perhaps because they were probably paying him more than a lot of others in NXT. So coming to the main roster, he's a guy who I mentioned earlier, you know, he's in the running for that next Rey Mysterio spot, the next masked superstar that WWE could market that they've been looking for the last decade or so or more. And, you know, very talented guy. If you haven't seen him in the ring, I think you'll be impressed by what you see at WrestleMania. But really has the potential to be, you know, maybe not a main eventer in WWE, but he's going to be a solid glue guy in that upper mid card, that mid card secondary title picture that is going to put on good matches on TV and on PLEs and pay-per-views. So he's one to look out for sure. And then Paul Heyman's induction speech in the Hall of Fame, it is in Philadelphia. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of time limit he has, especially now that they're doing it after SmackDown. I know that when the Hall of Fame was an event unto itself, they even started implementing time limits for the speeches. And, you know, a lot of the WWE writers were writing speeches for the wrestlers. I don't think that's going to happen for Paul Heyman. But I do wonder if he's going to have to be a little tighter on his speech because it's taking place after SmackDown, where the speeches are probably going to be even shorter than they normally would. So that kind of stinks, especially for someone as loquacious as Heyman and who has such an interesting story to tell as Heyman. But if you do watch his speech after SmackDown and are unsatisfied with it, I definitely encourage you to check out the Paul Heyman DVD, which I'm assuming is part of the WWE Network on Peacock, because that was a really compelling watch and dug really into a lot of the idiosyncrasies that have made Paul Heyman both very popular and very unpopular amongst fans and wrestlers and management throughout his years. You know, as far as what I'm looking for in his speech, I think the most interesting thing is how he appeals to the Philadelphia audience. He's a god in Philadelphia for running ECW, and I do wonder how much of his speech is going to be on ECW versus what he's done in WWE, which is a whole other, not even just a chapter of his career, but a whole other book of his career, really. So it's going to be really interesting. I mean, if there's anyone who is in wrestling today that you would wish would write a book, it's Paul Heyman, I think. At least he would be up there in the top three, probably. And so the anecdotes that he probably has to share, and the hope is you get a few of them, maybe ones you haven't heard before in his speech. I think that's maybe a best-case scenario for the speech, as well as hearing some first-time anecdotes there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that'll wrap it up for this evening. Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you so much for emailing. Thank you so much for listening and being such a big part of what we do here, not only at The Torch, but also on Wrestling Night in America. A reminder, next Saturday and Sunday night, after both legs of WrestleMania, we're going to be going on the air, taking your phone calls, your emails. Hope to hear from a lot of people about their thoughts on WrestleMania. You can follow me on social media at Greg M. Parks. It's going to be a fun week. It's going to be an interesting week, and we'll talk to you next time, because if it's the weekend, as it will be next weekend, it's Wrestling Night in America.